diabetes. Seems like this disease is frequently in the news. Honestly, we could probably do a regular segment just talking about research and updates. Of course, that would preclude the other excellent topics we bring you each week. In this case, it actually seems like the information most useful to you is information that affects your life day to day if you do have diabetes. And that's where we're going this morning with Jody Kearns, registered dietitian and diabetes educator from the Joslin Diabetes Center. She joins us this morning. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning.
It's good to have you back.
Well, thanks for having me.
Our topic is food, which is always a good topic.
Surprise.
But it's actually a shift in some of the recommendations for people with diabetes.
Yes, the recommendations traditionally have been only on carbohydrate consistency. Now, there was a new study that came out not too long ago that looked at what we call the glycemic index in addition to carb consistency.
Okay, so let's see if we can define a few things. First of all, when you're talking about carbohydrates, mm-hmm. you're talking about what kinds of foods?
Well, carbohydrates are typically those foods that come from the ground. Plant-based foods. Now, of course, with anything, there's always an exception, and that would be milk. Milk has naturally occurring lactose, which is a milk sugar.
Okay.
So foods that come from the ground plus milk will have carbohydrate.
Okay. And then you mentioned glycemic index, and that is like way beyond what I understand. So explain that one to me.
The glycemic index actually has been around for a while, and it's a way of looking at how quickly a particular food increases your blood sugar. Not just the carbohydrate content per se, but how fast that food increases your blood sugar.
So this is, it's still referring to carbs.
Yes.
But it's not really like the calories or a measurement like that. It's more a measurement about how quickly you...
Yes. So foods are given a category. A low glycemic index food would be given like a number of 55.
Okay.
A medium glycemic index food might be given a number of 56 to 70. And then higher than 70 would be considered high.
Okay.
So the best thing to do would be to try to choose lower glycemic index food. So it gives a person with diabetes another tool to use as far as their meal planning goes.
Okay. So low glycemic index translates to it takes a longer or shorter time to get into the blood.
Longer,
and that's good.
Yes.
That's where you want to go with this.
Yes.
All right. So now, let's talk about a chocolate chip cookie. That is what? High?
Well, off the top of my head, I'm not sure. But what you have to do, and that brings up a good point, is that ice cream is considered very low, but that doesn't mean it's a good thing to eat because it's a high-fat food. French fries are considered low. That doesn't mean it's a good thing to eat because they're high-fat foods.
Okay.
And those two foods I just mentioned have a lower glycemic index because of their fat content. Fat has a tendency to slow down how quickly the carbohydrate is digested and absorbed.
Okay. All right. Really, the bottom line then to make this useful for people who are listening is to say that, yes, low glycemic is good, but why is it good? Why do we care?
Because it improves diabetes control.
Okay.
Glucose control.
Part of the headline that we're actually referring to this morning was bringing up the question of cardiovascular health. And of course, with diabetes patients, one of the comorbidities, one of the second things they have to worry about is how it affects their heart.
Right.
And stroke, heart mm-hmm. attacks, and mm-hmm. so forth. So if I understand correctly, this shift in how we're eating is going to improve cardiovascular health?
Well, in this particular study, it showed a decrease in the bad cholesterol, triglycerides. And so in this particular study, yes, and it increased what we call the good cholesterol or the HDL.
Okay. Now, if we step aside from diabetes, one of the things we know is that good heart healthy foods are things like oatmeal,
mm-hmm.
Things like olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
And is that what you're talking about here? Is people with diabetes starting to look toward those foods more?
Those foods that have a lower glycemic index, yes.
Okay. So if you can put it all together for us, if we're talking about, say, oatmeal,
mm-hmm.
that has a low glycemic index.
Depends
then?
On the kind of oatmeal.
Okay.
If it's long cooking, if it's a whole grain, it's going to have a lower glycemic index than maybe an instant. See, it's not really cut and dry because there's within a food group, there can be different types of that product that may have a different glycemic index.
Okay. So all I've really done then is confused listeners and confused myself, because if I am diabetic, and I'm not, but if I am, and now I'm told that I have to make a shift in what I'm eating, how am I going to know the right things to eat?
Well, what you would do is I would encourage you to look at the carbohydrate-containing foods that you do eat and mm-hmm. see if there's a better choice. See if there's something that's higher in fiber. Maybe do a little research. Look at books that have glycemic index databases. There's no one list because the foods are enormous. There's a large number of foods.
Sure.
And the information available becomes available each and every day.
Okay. So let's say for right now, I have instant oatmeal for breakfast.
Right.
So and you're saying I should look at that instant oatmeal. And do what?
What I'm saying is that you should look at the instant oatmeal, see if you can find some information about what the glycemic index is of that particular product, mm-hmm. either by looking through different books that are available or Googling glycemic index, which is there's a large number of databases out there you can look at.
Okay.
And see if there's a type of oatmeal, like a longer cooking oatmeal, that would have a lower glycemic index.
Okay, because that would mean it would get into my blood.
It would make your blood sugar go up slower. Okay. So instead of a quick rise peak, we're going to have more of a blunted peak.
Which is good because that keeps my blood sugar at a more regular level.
Right.
Okay. All right. On a day-to-day basis, I know that you educate people with diabetes. You teach them the kinds of things they should be eating mm-hmm. and how they should be mm-hmm. regulating these carbohydrates. Have you started implementing the glycemic index into what they're learning?
Well, it depends on the person because mm-hmm. it is more work.
It is.
Sometimes people have a difficult time just grasping the carbohydrate consistency. But for those patients that seem to have a good understanding of what we're talking about, I certainly do. Pull out my list, try to give them some resources, try to talk about some changes that they can make to choose lower glycemic index food. So as with any meal planning, it's very individualized.
It is. Okay. And really what it goes back to, if I understand correctly, is that with people who have diabetes, they have to be really careful about developing heart disease as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this actually addresses both needs.
In this study, yes.
In this study, yes. All right. Are there any other studies out there that would say that that is not true?
I can't speak to that. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Okay. All right. But for what we know right now, it can't be a bad habit to be addressing heart disease anyway.
No, absolutely not.
All right. Anything else we should know about glycemic index and diabetes?
Well, one thing is just that the glycemic index of a food can be affected by a number of different things, which is one of the reasons why it's not standard. It's not given as a standard meal planning tool.
Okay.
For example, if the food is cooked with something else, if the fruit is riper than one than another type of fruit. So there's other variables which can affect the glycemic index. It's not just a cut and dry thing. But there is information available that the person with diabetes could go out and look up for themselves.
Okay. And they can always ask their doctors, can't they, to mm-hmm. help them with mm-hmm. this kind of diet.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Well, Jody Kearns from the Joslin Center in SUNY Upstate, thanks so much for coming by this morning.
Well, thanks. Nice to see you.
And listeners, you may be interested in a series of classes called Living with Diabetes. They're held at the Joslin Diabetes Center across from Nottingham High School in Syracuse. You can phone 464-5726 for more information or check their website at upstate.edu/Joslin. That's J-O-S-L-I-N, where you'll see a link to patient education or find a link from healthlinkonair.org.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. 8 out of 10, or congrats, you just graduated from doctor school, doctor. Kind of scary, isn't it, how long it takes to get an appointment to see a specialist now, and who knows about years from now. And worrisome, too, thinking about ending up in a nursing home, saying goodbye to our life savings that we're hoping to spend in Paris, Hawaii, China, or to send our grandkids to college. Now, if we want to stay out of the specialist's office and the nursing home and be playing bridge or golf at 80 instead, how are we going to do it? Of course, if we haven't had a physical recently, start there. But here's a fact that might be useful to add into our thinking. 8 out of 10 of the leading causes of death have a behavioral factor. That is, what we do or don't do plays a big role in heart disease, stroke, AIDS, diabetes, cancers, car accidents. So after our physical, let's schedule an office visit for a mental, a checkup from the neck up. But here's the trick. This checkup is with ourself, because we're the specialist on our own thinking and behavior, doctor. And we don't need to make ourselves wait a couple months for an appointment, and there's no copay, and we're going to discover we already know a lot about how to stay healthy and happy, because one of the two biggest contributors to unhappy is unhealthy. I'll tell you about the other one some other time. Stay tuned. But in our checkup from the neck up with ourselves, doctor, we got to get real and ask how come we're not doing what we know makes for healthy, then figure out how to do it. Heal thyself, doctor. For example, we got to figure out how to walk a little more, eat a little better, lower our stress level, and have some more fun with family and friends. We got to ask the tough questions like, is that double cheeseburger really worth a stay in the coronary care unit? Or would I rather spend that time playing golf? Is more status or money at work really a good trade for chuckles and hugs at home? Is that cigarette a good trade for our grandkids snuggled in our arms or watching them ride a bike or graduate high school? Is speeding down the highway to an accident and our own funeral a good swap for relaxing and enjoying the view along the way? And if those questions don't hit the mark, we got to craft some questions around what really matters for us. We're our own I do it or I don't do it, doctor. As we ask these questions, if our first thought is, I can't change that. No, the good thing about that hopeless thought is it lets us off the hook. And that's our first hurdle. Of course we can change, if we change what we do. So a good strategy there is to ask, am I willing to do the new do for golf, friends, grandkids? It takes some time and effort, but if and when we do the do, we can sing along with the doctor of Doobie Doobie Doo, Dr. Frank Sinatra. I did it my way. I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.